Movie references you may not get,
even if you saw the movie.
This is Rothman and Ice.
All right, welcome back. Rothman and Ice, Anthony Rothman, Matty Ice Hayes. We go to the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline, bring on our friend, National College Football Reporter at 24/7 Sports, Brandon Marcello. Brandon, good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk about the questions here at QB. I don't know. What is a bigger story? I mean, Alabama loses Mac Jones. Justin Fields leaves Ohio State. I guess they're both in the same boat. How do you view this thing? I know that, Saban certainly has a pretty star recruit. We feel like at Ohio State we have potential very good quarterbacks in the making. Is this the biggest off-season story for college football? Is Alabama and Ohio State and even Clemson, if you want to throw them in, replacing quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think that's maybe one of the top ones, you know, especially with Ohio State and what's going to shake out there with the quarterback battle. But here's the thing. It's just kind of like, you know, you mentioned those three teams, and a lot of us just kind of assume that those three teams will be just fine at quarterback, if not, of course, great. You know, especially Clemson, after we saw what DJ did last season against Notre Dame. And then you look at Alabama with Bryce Young, you know, the whispers you keep hearing out of that program, even going back to last season, was that Bryce Young might be better than Mac Jones, if not more consistent, which, you know, listen, Mac Jones was a Heisman Trophy finalist and did very well, but did so with two great receivers. But when you're at Alabama, you always have those great pieces around you. And I think those three programs, I don't think that necessarily, like, can those quarterbacks stand up is the next big storyline. But really, it's just kind of like we're waiting to see just how great those quarterbacks are going to be, not how bad, so to speak, or if they're going to fall apart.
You know, Brandon, I was checking out the piece that you put out there on 24/7 Sports about 10 programs who you believe are on the cusp of taking the next step. And one of the Big Ten teams in there is Maryland. And such a weird year for them with COVID and all of that. And they had Tua's brother, who I thought flashed when I watched a couple of their games. But what are you liking about Maryland, and why did you put them in that article?
Yeah, you know, their last two recruiting classes have been very good. I like the way Mike Loxley's trying to build the program there. Also, as you mentioned, with Tua's brother and what they've been able to do at quarterback and changing the kind of the complexion of what they expect out of that offense, but also as a team, has really kind of impressed me. And you mentioned last season. I mean, goodness gracious, they had four games canceled because of COVID-19, and yet they pushed through it, showed some progress, and I like how Coach kind of kept them all together despite all that. I mean, everybody faced challenges last season, as we all know, but four games canceled and keeping them all together and still being competitive, I really like what I saw. And plus, they return a lot of production, as I mentioned in that article. And that's a team that, you know, when I talk about breakthrough, it's all about how you define breakthrough from program to program. For Maryland, a breakthrough would be about a 500 record to going above 500, maybe winning 6-7 games. And I think that they're very well poised to do that this upcoming season and maybe be a thorn in the side of a couple of the Big Ten elites in some really tough games.
Brandon, I don't want to spring a team on you that maybe you haven't studied, but around here we've been very impressed with the Cincinnati Bearcats. And, mm-hmm. you know, being at the top of the Group of Five and what Luke Fickell has done with that program down there. And I took a peek at their schedule, and the fact that they're going to play, it looks like, at Indiana and then have a bye and then go to South Bend. What type of opportunity is this for Cincinnati this year playing those two teams? Indiana, who's very well thought of now under Tom Allen, and not a yeah. gimme W for sure, and then going to South Bend.
Yeah, that's huge. You know, I haven't really looked at their schedule, as you mentioned, but those are tremendous opportunities. And with Desmond returning at quarterback there and some experience, and as you mentioned, Luke Fickell really, I mean, probably the, you know, the next big-time coach we see hired somewhere potentially, I think that sets up well. And you talk about Cincinnati, you know, another team, a Group of Five team I've got kind of circled on my way is – maybe Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns. They've got Texas to open the season, you know, under Steve Sarkisian. They're going to be still trying to break everything new in. They're breaking in a new quarterback at Texas. And Louisiana, if you open the season with a win on the road at Texas, and, you know, we all saw it last season. They already beat a Big 12 team on the road in Iowa State, the Big 12 runner-up last season. You beat Texas on the road, that's going to grab everybody's attention. But with all the production they have coming back this next season at Louisiana, and they're in the top three in a lot of categories, goodness gracious, you go undefeated, and maybe Louisiana's that team we finally see break through and beat the first group of five team in the playoff. Now, that's a lot to ask, and as you mentioned, even with Cincinnati, you know, talk about that schedule and getting a bye before going to South Bend. But, you know, it's easy to sit here. It's what's great about the offseason. We can sit back and just dream up these scenarios. But, man, that is going to be super tough for Cincinnati. I will say this. I do think Indiana is going to take a little bit of a step back this upcoming season. And I very well could see Cincy knocking off the Hoosiers. Not so sure about going to South Bend and doing that.
A lot of intrigue around Nebraska when Scott Frost was hired. They brought him up from UCF. Hasn't really clicked probably the way that they thought it would here in the first couple of years. Where are you right now with the Cornhuskers and maybe what that'll look like when we get close to the football season and get going?
Yeah, I just don't know if they're going to get back to winning 8-9 games within the next year or two, and that could spell trouble for Scott Frost, but they should be a 500 team this upcoming season. The problem for Scott Frost is like they've almost entered kind of a panic mode. They've had a lot of people leave the program and transfer out, and they're trying to make quick fixes in recruiting to try and fix all that, but it's not a long-term plan. And in college football these days, when you hear long-term, people say, oh, a four-year plan. Well, long-term to me really has turned into a two- or three-year plan for a lot of these programs. And Nebraska is just kind of doing patchwork every offseason, it seems like. And, you know, listen, Nebraska's probably ready to finally get to 500 in the Big Ten under Scott Frost, maybe six or seven wins and get to a bowl game. But I don't know if that sets up very well for a healthy program, say, in 2022 or 2023. And if not, that could spell trouble for Frost's tenure there, because here we are already going to the fourth year and we have yet to see those results.
Brandon Marcello with us, National College Football Reporter, 24/7 Sports. All right, so we talked about the big boys. We threw in a couple others. Give me maybe the under-the-radar, maybe medium to big boy. The Sooners just missed out on the playoff for the first time under Riley last year. Their defense has improved, certainly. Georgia and Kirby Smart, what he's doing there, maybe the next step for the program has to be winning it all. But is there one of those two or another team you think is an under-the-radar playoff team this year?
Yeah, I think the Sooners might have the best team they've had yet in the playoff era and maybe in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, Oklahoma's just been knocking on the door over and over again, getting into the playoff or being on the cusp of it, and, of course, getting in the playoff and just not winning a game. But the thing for OU that really stands out to me is their defense last season. It's the best they've had in a while, and it doesn't get enough attention. We all want to talk about that offense, and even though they gave up some big points in some other games, that defense was pretty consistent last season and enforcing turnovers. If they continue to improve, which from what I've heard from some people there, they're expecting them to take another step defensively this upcoming season. That could really spell trouble for a lot of teams, not just in the Big 12, but finally when they get into the postseason potentially, represent the Big 12 in the college football playoff, maybe they can finally put it all together and get to a national championship game. Because, listen, shootouts are fun and everything, but you can only do that so many times before you get into a playoff atmosphere and it just wears you down. And we saw that, you know, previously in their matchup against Georgia in the college football playoff. It's just, you got to have pretty good defense, and Oklahoma hasn't had that, but it seems like, I think, they've kind of gotten to put it all together this upcoming season.
Wanted to go back to Bama with you real quick because you touched on their quarterback situation and how people view him right now. But when we get to the draft here in a couple of weeks, there's going to be some playmakers here hearing their name called probably fairly early, maybe three guys taken in the first round, depending on what happens with Najee Harris. What are they running back with? Who are they replenishing that offensive well with down there at Bama? Because we know they recruit very well, but I don't know if a ton of people know the names and the roster of Bama. What's going to be the playmakers for the Alabama this year?
Yeah, that's the thing with Alabama. It seems like every 3 years we kind of get into this situation where one or two guys step up that, you know, we're four or five star guys, but you know, they're not names that were kind of household names that we haven't been hearing about. And I think the same thing's going to happen this upcoming season. I mean, they've got players that even last year, their fourth leading receiver, that's probably going to end up being their number two or number one guy. But also, you know, to me, for Alabama, what makes that whole thing go for them has been their running backs. I mean, Najee Harris, we talk about Jalen Waddell and Devontae Smith and replacing them at receiver. To me, it's going to be much more difficult replacing Najee Harris at running back, because I thought he really got that whole thing rolling for them, because there were a couple of games last season, if you watched them up close, where they had to change the kind of their playing style. They kind of started playing more like 2009 Alabama, where they're just running between the tackles. And late in the season, they had a couple of games like that in the regular season, and Najee Harris kind of, listen, I mean, they were dominating everybody, but with anybody less than Najee Harris, they may have struggled a little bit more in those games. And so to me, as everybody wants to talk about the receivers and what they've been able to do over the last 4 to 5 years in that offense and that hurry up, no huddle that they've kind of implemented, to me, it all starts with the running back, and I'm more interested to see who steps up behind now Najee Harris. I think they'll probably go with a committee approach there, which is something Saban has done in the past.
Brandon, good stuff, man. Always appreciate talking college football with you. Be well. We'll bring you back soon. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.